Welcome to Loveline. Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready? Then brace yourself.
This is Loveline with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
Call or text 833-LOVE-191.
Loveline is on now.
Looks like we made it. Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, don't laugh at my singing. I'm an artist. And producer Muggs is here. Episode 9. We have made it.
Wow.
Cats have 9 lives. And Loveline has 9 episodes. What? To live up to the namesake of this iconic brand, I mean, what do we need? Like another couple 10,000 episodes? How many? They did so many episodes back in the day, Muggs.
Yeah.
Zillions. They were a weeknight show.
It was years and years.
Years.
And decades, yeah. decades. Decades of Loveline.
I feel
decades.
Like I would feel good when we hit like episode 100.
Yeah. That would be amazing. That would be like about 2 years. That'd be incredible. But let's live in the here and now.
Woo.
It is Valentine's Day weekend. It's obnoxious when people make their birthdays like birthday months, but I think in the name of love, I don't mind that it's kind of been a Valentine's Day weekend.
Yeah. I mean, for my husband and I, we actually didn't celebrate on Valentine's Day.
What? Why? Oh, because you guys work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the busiest day in, like, my career.
Oh, because yeah. You're working.
Yeah.
Why were we so, I guess, without revealing personal details you might not want to, why is it busy that day for you? Like, what are you doing that day?
Like, talks. Work stuff.
Oh, yeah, because
Valentine's Day.
Because, like, shows would want to have you on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and like speeches, like, you know, university
talks. I never
thought
of that.
Yeah. So Valentine's Day, we usually don't celebrate that day. We usually move it. So we moved it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what, do you mind if I ask, what did you guys do for the holiday?
We did what I told you last weekend, what we were going to do. Do you remember?
No.
Oh, man.
The lips are moving.
You guys,
a week is long.
I work with two ADHD men who
it's not great.
Of anything.
Speaking of which, we kind of touched on that last episode at the end. I want to we'll save it, but I want to know who you think has it worse. Not
who?
Right now.
Oh, ADHD.
Between Kevin and I, who has ADHD worse? Not right now. I don't want to know your answer.
I want to weigh in on this.
Are we changing?
No. We're gonna go because we have prepared a show. If you're listening to Loveline, we have prepared a show. I promise you, we've prepared a show, and we think it's
this
a great
is
show.
A random rant.
We're winging it, baby.
But just really quickly, I probably have something with my brain because, like, I can. I was recently out to dinner with my. This is an example of my brain being weird. I was recently out to dinner with my girlfriend and her parents for my girlfriend's birthday, and her brother was born in 2000. And her mother was saying that she was at the movie theaters seeing Meet the Fockers when her brother, like, when she went into labor with her brother. And I immediately knew that was incorrect. Not that it mattered. I'm not like that weird where I'd be like, "Now I was in the right movie," you know, during this tender family story. But I immediately internally knew that was wrong because Meet the Fockers is the sequel that came out in 2004, and Meet the Parents is the movie she was at because that came out in 2000. Now, I can do that with any sort of statistics. I can do that with music, with anything pop culture. I mean, with history. And so my girlfriend's always like, "You have a photographic memory or something like that." And I don't know what that entails. But I have a weird brain that moves very fast, constantly needs to be stimulated. And normal life is too slow for me.
Yeah.
And I also like my – I can like – I retain – every single thing that's like ever happened to me my entire life, except when I've been at fault, I block those things out. If I'm at fault in a memory, I don't remember those memories. But Muggs, I would describe as slightly different, where he gets distracted very quickly, and I deal with distraction, but I don't see it manifest in the way that Muggs does.
Mm-hmm.
But Muggs is also very creative, highly creative, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like. I would say distraction is maybe like at the top of the list, where mine is more like a.
You're just jumping from point A to point C, or you're with you when you're like you have so many great ideas, you jump around to all the. So you'll start on one idea, and then you'll start to explain it, and then you'll just start with a whole nother idea,
right.
And never go back to what you were saying about the last idea. So I'm like, wait a minute, we got to go back to what we were saying with. That's your, yeah. So
you know what I'm like? I'm like Howard Dean for an older listener. You remember when he was like, "We're going to go to Michigan. Then we're going to, And it's like, that's what I'm going to do. And then we're going to take over the world. You know what I mean? It's a lot.
So maybe Tara can't pinpoint who has it worse now. We just have different forms of it.
Yeah.
You have different forms of it.
Yes.
And if you want to learn more on how that affects your romantic relationship, you can go watch my YouTube video.
Oh, yeah. You just did a whole thing on men with ADHD.
Yeah. A whole episode about men with ADHD.
Do men with ADHD finish faster? Because they're, you know.
No, I'd say they finish, it takes them longer.
You probably do.
I can't focus.
Yeah. You're like getting distracted and you're thinking about something like, oh, did I?
No, no, but seriously, that happens. Tara, seriously.
It's true.
In the middle of sex, I can have the most random thought and I could be an absolute brick and then just go.
And just be, yeah.
How much of that do you think is radio? Because I beg the question, because radio is a business. It's almost like, to coin a phrase, it's like a did I leave the stove on business. Do you know what I mean by this?
Yeah.
Like with radio, I will have paralyzing fear of like, did I not do that task? Or like, did I forget to turn off my mic when I left?
Mm.
Or, you know what I mean? Or did I say the wrong thing on the air? There's something about that where it's like, it's the feeling of, did I leave the stove on?
Did I lock my car? Did I leave the board? Did I leave the mic on in the studio?
That's what I mean. Do you ever have those moments where you're just like,
time.
Did I do the thing they asked me to do?
All the time. That's my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm the guy who's locking his car five times, walking away from it.
Just, right. Yeah.
You know, so.
Being nervous. Yeah. No.
And anxiety. I have like, not many people know, but maybe Kevin has seen it. Tara, you might have seen it, like, just starting to work with me. But I have very, very bad anxiety sometimes. And it starts like, it's almost like if the anxiety monster attacks, my day is going downhill if I let it. Right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
You've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Because, and to be fair with people who suffer from, you know, ADHD or anxiety, you'll be like, dude, this person sounds like a lunatic, right? Because you're living in, let's say, I mean, reality is arbitrary, right? Of course. But you're living in reality and this person is not living in reality. So it's almost tough to be like offended by them or like, you know what I mean? Where you're just going like, man, whatever you're going through, like you're living in a different, because that's what's so tough about it. And this also relates, I want to talk about this because it relates to relationship woes as well. And, you know, they talk about how you can't just love the partner how you love people. You have to love them how they need to be loved, right? But it's also like reality is skewed. Like it is skewed, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we were watching that like Netflix last month, I think, released the OJ doc.
Uh-huh.
And this guy, what's the guy's name that's the lawyer in the OJ doc? Not Johnny Cochran. He was on Johnny Cochran's team.
Carl Edwards.
Okay. Carl Edwards, right? He said justice looks different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it really stuck with me because I think that reality is just so malleable. So anyways, I go on this long rant on Loveline to say that like sometimes if Muggs is having an anxiety episode, I'm like, dude, like you're not making any sense right now. But he's living in a world, not to speak for you, this is my interpretation, where like there's five saber tooth tigers in the room with him.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like sirens and there's like, I'm again, this is me imagining somebody's condition.
Right.
But it's like, that's his reality, bro.
Yeah.
Or their reality or whoever, right?
And your brain is wired differently. So I think it is important to be more empathetic towards neurodivergent people. And, you know, being a professor teaching the younger generation in college, I encounter neurodivergent people every single day. And so for me, having patience in communication and paying attention for them to finish that thought is a practice that I'm very used to.
Now, from what you've seen, is neurodivergence on the rise?
Oh, yeah.
So 100%. Is that something where we are now tracking it, or are there modern elements of life that are influencing the developments of neurodivergence?
It's both. So it's technology use. We know that that's like one of the causes. Like iPad kids develop ADHD and anxiety. They have what is it called? Object anxiety. So like have you ever seen kids freak out when their parents take away their iPad? Like
yeah.
They freak
yeah.
out. They
yeah.
get on the floor and like, you know, throw tantrums. Like,
I mean, you know what it is? It's withdrawals.
Yeah, yeah.
It's withdrawals.
It's the same.
It's like when buddies of mine will quit
addiction.
Cigarettes.
Yeah.
Or like I remember the first time I ever quit vapes, I was so irritable. And we talk about that skewed reality. I remember being here and talking to people and just on one. I was on one. And I wanted to fight everybody. You know what I mean? And you don't realize it because you're just going through these, like, you know, you're like, for me, the nicotine, right? Like, my body was like, where's this nicotine, you know? But that's what it is. It's like iPad withdrawals.
Yep. And so that contributes to the rise of, like, people becoming neurodivergent. But also, it's a very valid point to say that people are tracking it more and people are getting diagnosed more. Doesn't mean that people in the past didn't have ADHD. They just didn't go get diagnosed.
But I got to imagine, like, these screens are not helping.
No.
The development of ADHD.
That's why it's so important to be mindful. Like, it doesn't, it's not like, it's not that doomed where people are like, oh my God, absolutely have to cut all technology out of your life. Like, it's not like that. But when you have children that is that have developing brains, you want to make sure you limit time, like 30 minutes screen time. That's what I'm going to give to my children.
You know when you see old pictures of, like, kids in the 1900s and, No. I don't mean the late 1900s. I mean the early 1900s. But you'll see, like, an 8-year-old smoking a cigarette, and they'll be like, "I'm like, this is crazy. Like, look at that little kid. He's working. He's working in the factory. He's 8 years old, and he's smoking a cigarette, right?"
Yeah.
And we go, "Well, that's terrible." But at the time, they didn't know it was terrible.
Right.
You know, famous Johnny Carson. You know, the very sad. You know, he passed away in 2005, an LA icon, an entertainment icon. And he was remarking to one close friend, I forget, but this is a famous story where he's like, "These damn cigarettes." You know, he was like. Because they didn't know. You go back to the Tonight Show, they just didn't know. He's smoking cigarettes with every star of the day.
Yeah.
And they just didn't know. I think that's what these iPads are going to be. Because the same way that we would never let a child smoke a cigarette today, I think it's weird to give the kid. I get it. I've talked about this on the show. I don't want to be redundant. I get it. Everyone gets tired. You're exhausted. You don't want to be a dad for or a mom for you know.
Yeah, or it's Valentine's Day and you want an hour to connect
with
your partner.
Of course.
Give your kids the iPad.
Of course. And I'm sure in, like, little bits and pieces, it's fantastic. And again, I'm not a parent. So I'm just saying, no, but seriously, I'm saying that with respect and empathy to parents and how difficult that job is. But I'm just like, I don't know, man. I think in, like, 20 years, like, we're not going to see kids like, or maybe they were just going to, maybe they're going to have screens in their heads and it's going to be even worse. I have no idea. But on the topic of Valentine's Day, to tie it all the way back together, you did have a nice Valentine's Day?
Yes.
I don't remember what you said.
Okay.
So well, in terms
ADHD.
Of
ADHD.
Well, I know. No, I don't remember what you said last week, but yes, it probably is ADHD.
We did many things, but we started, so first off, we didn't have it on Valentine's Day.
I remember that part.
Like I said, because it's usually a busy day for me. But we started with, like, during the day, giving each other a massage. And then we went to dinner at this place that he surprised me. Like, he made the reservation. And it was a yummy dinner. I loved it. French food. And then afterwards, we did the sexy art night.
Oh, you
that
did?
I talked about last week. Yeah.
Did that go...
Did you listen to sexy music like that?
Is this sexy music, by the way?
This is Bridgerton.
He played this last week, and I didn't want to say anything.
No, this wasn't it.
This wasn't it?
I played this last week.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, when I told the story, sexy.
When I told the story about St. Valentine's
Day. Yeah, this is what you did. This is not sexy.
Pony is sexy.
By Genuine? That's a good song.
We can only play 20 seconds of it.
Did it go as well as you imagined the painting?
Oh, yeah.
You did? Better. You liked it? It was hot?
It was actually very sexy. Yeah.
Really?
I painted his penis and then he, like, put it on, like, a piece of canvas.
Oh, really?
So now I have an art piece of his penis.
You love the penis, though.
I do.
You do. Mm-hmm. Why don't other women? Is it just as simple as we've talked about in previous love lines where they're not as visual? Is it just purely visual?
It's simple. Yeah, it's visual. Some people are, some people aren't. And I actually have many girlfriends that are visuals, and we often talk about, like, the penis and how, like, pretty and how much we like penises.
Let me know. By the way, jump in if I can't talk about any of this that I'm about to ask you. Because speaking of penises, you were telling me recently when we were off air, I believe, that women like the idea of a larger penis. They'll even talk about it. Maybe they'll share photos of one with their friends as a gag, no pun intended. But they don't like the reality of the experience with one.
Correct.
But then what about women who say things like they like feeling or women that say maybe there's a pride in taking that much, right? Which are real world things I've heard come out of women's mouths, right? What do you say to those people?
I mean, some people do enjoy, you know, the extra large sizes that are not near average of penis size. And I think there could be various, like, psychological reasons. I think one is the feeling of, like, being taken and dominated by the sheer size of something, and allowing you to, like, kind of surrender and feel submissive and feel taken care of. And I think another one is a challenge, like, almost like a, this is a game for me. Like, let's see how much I can take.
Okay.
Because there are people that do that with dildos.
Right.
Like with sex toy dildos.
Right.
That they will upgrade.
Really?
The sizes to like a really huge one, like a 9-inch one.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where do they do this? On the internet?
Yes.
Now, could you maybe after the show, you could just give me like a list of websites where this happens so I never go there? So I can just avoid those websites?
Oh, so it doesn't affect yourself.
Yeah, just if you could give me like a detailed like URLs maybe that are clickable and easy to figure out, and then I just won't go there.
Right.
Just so I, you know. Just so I don't go there. Is it as simple as that? Like personality based, it's just differences, or is it anatomy? Like, are women, or do some women have? I mean, to ask a silly question, are vaginas all different sizes?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe women with larger vaginas, they're the ones that say these things.
Yeah. So my friends have larger vaginas, or like tend to have like larger, like large hips.
How do you know which ones have larger vaginas?
Size queens.
Yeah, but how do they? Oh, so the hips.
Hips.
But do you guys talk about this? Do women talk about this? Go, like, yeah, I got a big vagina. Do they?
Wait.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
Okay. His eyes are like bugging out of his brain right now.
I think we don't say like, oh, I have a big vagina, but I think we do say like, you know, I have bigger hips. Or I'm trying to think now, like what my friends.
My walls are cavernous.
My.
Wait,
is that what they say?
What determines? So
well,
if a woman has big hips.
I remember now. A friend of mine said, like, I'm just a bigger girl, so I want a bigger penis. That's what she said.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. But anatomically, I don't know if you know this or not, or if it's provable or not. Like, women with bigger hips, do they inherently have bigger vaginas?
Not always, but typically.
And why is that?
Just.
Because it's just wider?
System. Yeah. Like, if you measure the vaginal walls of, let's say, African women. And it could be like African American or African in Africa versus women in like China that have very narrow hips. Like women in Africa will have bigger, you know, vaginal canal.
Because of the wider hips?
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy?
Wider hips, bigger body.
Some guy or some woman, somebody measures vagina walls. Isn't that wild?
I'm sure it's just data from like gynecologists.
But that's what I'm saying though. Yeah. Like and I'm not saying a random guy's out there with a ruler, but I just
on
like
Reddit.
I marvel at just how I continuously marvel at how many jobs there are in the world.
There's data for everything.
I just found out that Coldplay has a head of visual content, and that guy's job is just visual content for Coldplay. That, and then the title head of, right? Well, it would insinuate or infer, you could, that there's people under him. So there's just a team that they get up every day and they work on visual content
for one band.
And granted, they're a huge band, but you know, there's people that wake
That's
up
interesting.
And yeah, there's people that wake up and do that, and then there's people that wake up and measure vagina walls. And
yeah,
who on the Coldplay team measures the vagina walls?
You know what, next time we see Chris, we should ask him. So that's interesting. The bigger the hips, probably the bigger the vagina.
Yeah.
All right. And then those are probably the women. Well, why is it like exciting? Because some women say it's exciting, like being with a bigger person.
What do you mean?
Well, like I can think of women that were small women and express that.
Oh, yeah. Then they probably just take it as a challenge.
Okay.
Yeah, like it's a challenge. It's something to achieve.
Mm.
And a sense of achievement, you know, a sense of pride or even higher sexual self-esteem that you're able to take big penises. However, I would say that's a minority.
Yeah.
All my girlfriends, and I have lots of girlfriends, like one girlfriend in my life is a size queen. Other people just love either average or a little bit bigger than average.
And what's she like, the size queen?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. Like, what
size
kind of...
is she like?
No.
She likes 8 inches.
No, I never said.
She likes 8 inches.
She's 5'3", 102 pounds.
I literally asked, what is she like? And now we're getting measurements. No, in terms of her, is she does she fit that profile of like a wider hip person?
Yes.
And, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And she's always been that way, or that was a discovery she made?
She has always been that way since I've known her, which is over 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
she
cool.
She has had sex with people with remarkable sizes, and she takes pictures of them too.
Really?
And so there is like a group chat of like her sending all these penis pictures.
Do women have a penis museum? Like, do they remember all the penises?
I remember all the penises.
You do?
Yeah, I take pictures of almost all of them.
Wasn't there a movie like To All the Boys I've Ever Loved? To All the Penises I've Ever Seen?
Yeah.
That'd be a good spinoff.
Because, like, I don't know if I keep a vagina museum.
I have seen some very unfortunate ones.
What? Which
penises?
Ones? Penises? You know, this is, you're going to laugh at me. And they, like, this might be a clip. I had this thing for a long time where I thought every guy was 6 foot. I just thought every guy was like about 6 foot. 6'1", 6 foot, 5'11". I just thought everyone was like that. Obviously, oh. Yeah, right? And I just assumed that everybody was like the same size penis. Like, I just thought every penis was like basically the same. Like, maybe this guy's
Which
got a half
what?
Inch here. I don't know. Like, whatever the... Like,
what is it?
Well, no.
Say a number.
I didn't think like that. I just thought like... Because the only penises I ever saw... were in porn, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I never saw a penis in the locker room. I remember there was, like, one kid in high school that would always be naked in the locker room. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he was the guy that was showing off.
Yeah, but...
Was he a shower?
Yeah, for sure.
Probably
in my
shower.
High school, yeah.
Yeah, there, right?
Kevin was right, is right. Like, there was always that one guy, and he was a shower.
Some people are, like, shower. Like, I see it, I'm like, whoa. But then, like, it gets bigger, and it's not that much bigger. Yeah, but then some people are, like, just... Tiny, when they're cold, it's like 1 inch.
Yeah.
And then it literally became like 7 inches.
Yeah, isn't that... Women are fascinated by that.
Hey,
so fascinated.
That's me.
There you go. Grow or not a shower.
Grow or not a shower. It's insane.
Like, it's insane. When you're cold, it's like 1 inch.
Right.
I would say 1.5, 2, but... But it is small. It's,
yeah.
It's like a button. It looks like a button.
Yeah.
Almost, right?
It is kind of crazy.
and then,
like, whoa.
And then, like, when it's ready to go, it's like, I feel like Ron Jeremy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
And I don't want to feel like Ron Jeremy.
You don't want to feel like
I don't want to
You
feel
definitely
like
don't want to smell like him either. That's what got the biggest laugh.
I don't know.
Yeah,
you never know as
much. Because he smells.
Yeah, he smells.
He smells.
So, but what determines, like, sort of like from an anatomy standpoint, or if there's a scientific explanation, what makes somebody a shower or a grower or vice versa?
There's no scientific standpoint.
Really?
No.
Because are there guys where, like, soft, they're kind of what they are, and then they get erect?
Do you mean flaccid? Like, same size,
yeah. You think there's men
erection?
Where like they're the same size, flaccid and erect?
It wouldn't be exactly the same. There will always be, because blood flows. Whenever blood flows anywhere, it poofs up, right? Like, think of like when you hit something on your finger and your blood flows all the way there.
I don't want to think about that when I think about my erect penis. I have like a great image of my erect penis, and
well,
it's like all these great connotations of these amazing times I've had with my erect penis.
Get over yourself.
No, I'm saying I do not have a fondness of the idea of your erect penis.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're
like, dude, I'm
stubbing your toes.
That's my best friend.
That's the best.
That's my best friend.
That's its maximum potential. Yes, you have to become very friendly with it.
I'll be honest. Have you ever had a bad time with your erect penis?
Yes.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean.
I appreciate that honesty. Thank you, because that helps a lot of men. I think too many men, they feel bad that, like, they experience delay ejaculation.
Oh,
they
yeah.
can't ejaculate. They can't get an erection, or they lose an erection halfway. Like, totally fine. Like, happens to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people don't talk about it.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks for bumming me out. I've had a great time, and I want to shout out my erect penis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because even my best friends will disappoint me from time to time. My best friends. Or I'll go out and be like, yeah, that was an all right night, or the food wasn't that good at the restaurant me and my buddy went to, right? But always, me and my erect penis, best times. Best times of my life. Me and my erect penis.
Do you have a name for your erect penis?
No, I'm not like weird
Do
like that.
Do you have a name for your erect penis?
Stan.
Nice.
Why?
Nice.
I don't know.
Flat Stanley.
Like Eminem, you
know that? Never mind. We'll be back on Loveline.
Loveline will be right back. Loveline on K-Rock.
No one else can find the trouble so quickly or repair it so economically.
Loveline's coming right back. Hang on.
KROQ. And now, back to Loveline.
Loveline
with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
Loveline on K-Rock.
Back on Loveline, it is Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, producer Muggs, and we are going to break down the top three kinks in America. Now, I'm a big college football fan. You ever watch college football?
Yeah.
They have like the coaches poll, the USA Today AP poll, right? And you have the top 25. College basketball does the same thing. I assume college baseball probably does too. And you kind of, that's how you can figure out who the best teams are in the country, the top 25 teams. And that's a great sort of like vetting audience, right? The coaches that play against these teams each and every week. Now, I have a question though, with that in mind. How do you determine the top three kinks in America? Was this a study, Dr. Tara?
Yeah, so this is related to like kinks and sexual fantasies, and it's based on the study of Dr. Justin Lemiller from the Kinsey Institute. Have you ever heard of the Kinsey Institute?
Yeah, didn't Ray Fiennes play that guy in a movie?
I've never
George,
seen
George Kinsey?
Have you seen a movie?
No.
Is it George Kinsey? Is that his name?
You're looking at the wrong guy.
George Kinsey? I'm looking at both of you. Is it George Kinsey?
You know, I would be damned.
You would be remiss. I believe the guy's name was George Kinsey. I could be wrong. Was it George Kinsey?
George Kinsey was a professional footballer who was capped four times.
One point for the doofus.
No, he was a footballer.
George Kinsey? No, who's the guy? Is the Kinsey? Kinsey. What's Kinsey's first name?
No points for the doofus.
I actually don't know his first name.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Bugs, you have a computer. You have Google. I'm begging you. We're live on the radio.
I'm trying, dude. There's a lot of George Kinseys
out
there.
No, Dr. Kinsey. Just type in Dr. Kinsey.
Doctor. Okay, that's different, dude. George Kinsey. You know, there's the mailman. Alfred Kinsey, American American sexologist, biologist.
I forgot.
Okay.
And professor of entomology and zoology.
He was real into sex.
Who founded the Institute for Sex Research at Indiana University.
By the way, you know what I would love? We're going to start booking guests on the show pretty soon. You know who I want to talk to?
Who?
Whoever used to make Real Sex on HBO. Remember Real Sex?
Yeah.
I remember, like, I didn't love that show because, like, you know, it was kind of, like, serious and weird and probably informative. But, like, when you're a kid trying to get your rocks off, I was I love it. Like,
I jade it.
Yeah, but you'd have to get the right, like, you know what was way better for Jay in it was Taxi Cab Confessions. That was way better because, dude, you'd be, like, getting into it and it would be like, and then they'd start talking about a guy. And you'd be like, all right, yeah, get back to the girl, you know? And then you'd be like, yeah, they're talking about this guy a lot, you know? And then he's, like, naked. And then I'm like, I can't do this. So anyways, we should talk to the producers, though, of that show. I would love to interview Real Sex. Do you remember Real Sex on HBO?
Yeah.
That was a big show, man.
Yeah.
Anyways, so, hey, this Kinsey Institute did this study. Shout out to Lemur. Who's the doctor?
Dr. Justin Lemiller.
Mario Lemur. Okay.
Justin.
Yeah. So anyways. So this guy figured out the top three kinks?
Top three kinks and sexual fantasies in America.
Okay, but is
by
this
surveying over 4,000 people.
What was this? Like they called people at their homes? How did they do this? Do we not know?
Surveys.
Surveys and they answered
it? Yeah, online surveys.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I always like get a kick out of like these polls before any election. And they're like,
how did you collect the data?
Oh, wow. Well, no. And they just ask people in public around other people and they go, who are you voting for?
Yeah.
And if there's one socially acceptable candidate and one who is a polarizing person, what do you think the polls are going to say? Right? So I'm just saying in the similar vein. Are you if they're going up to people outside of Gelson's supermarket in Los Angeles and they're going, hey, what kind of kinks are you into? I'm probably going to be pretty tame, but if it was anonymous, I think we're going to get honest answers. Were you surprised at the top three kinks, Dr.
No.
Tara? You weren't.
Mm-mm.
Okay, Mugs, let's play a little game here. Can we guess number three?
Sure.
Okay, what do you think the number three biggest kink in America is?
I would say, it's an oldie but a goodie. Bondage or like rope play, being tied up.
I think it's going to be higher. My guess for number three is I'll say role play. We can't have dead air, Tara.
Role play is not on top three.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, is that not a kink?
It is, but it's not on top three.
Okay.
It is definitely, I'm going to say for sure, top 10.
What is number three?
Okay, number three is public sex.
Okay, well, all right, there we go. Yeah, that's kind of obvious.
Having sex outdoors, I think a lot of people like that. I'm one of them. My husband's one of them. So there's two of us.
Wow.
I would have too much anxiety.
Yeah. Well, you've had sex in the ocean.
Yeah,
in hot tubs. This guy thinks he's Aquaman.
That's terrible. Terrible for her vagina, by the way.
I know. Well, you know what I think that is? is we clearly, this is what cracks me up about modern society, we clearly want to be outside, okay?
Yeah.
So like I have YouTube TV. By the way, YouTube TV, if you want to sponsor the show, I love YouTube TV. I have YouTube TV, and they have a channel now called Zen, YouTube TV Zen channel, right? Mm-hmm. You listen to me, Dr. Tar?
Yes.
Okay. So it's like all like rivers.
Yeah.
Or it's like the woods. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it on my big 100-inch TV where I watch my sports and whatnot. And I'm going, how goofy do I look to my ancestors? Where I'm like, I'm looking this house and I'm like, oh, I like the river. Here, yeah, like people fall asleep to like white noise. It's because it's like it's outside. Or like air-conditioned homes, right? Or you know, people do all this sort of like sunlight therapy now. Yeah. And it's like we just try to recreate, or people put plants in their house. I mean, I just think about ancestors looking at us and going, you idiots, just go outside.
Yeah.
And I think this, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but maybe you can say more to this. If I ever have a buddy or my girlfriend's down in the dumps or anything, I'm like, go outside, walk around, get some vitamin D from the sun, work out, and just tell me if you're anxious after that. Tell me if you aren't feeling better moving around outside. So I think public sex, we probably do want to have sex outside because that's probably where we're supposed to be having sex.
Yeah. I mean, people back in the days didn't have houses or apartments.
Right.
They had sex outside.
They had huts made of pizza.
Sasquatch Sunset.
No, we're not going back there. You know what I love about Muggs? I have to say this. What I love about Muggs is he will say something that is incredibly incriminating about himself. And I will go, as a friend, I'll go, well, I'm not going to acknowledge that, or I won't bring that up again, because why broadcast that about my buddy? He's honest. He's forthright. I appreciate that on the show. And then, so I'll be like, okay, cool. That's like, you know, that's a dead and gone if you didn't hear the episode. And then he'll re-bring it up that he watches Sasquatch sex movies.
No, dude, it's a movie. It's an actual movie released by an actual real, like.
Yeah, it's a real movie.
I can't do this with you.
It's a real movie.
It's not Muggs.
Sasquatch
Muggs,
sex movie.
Muggs.
Tara.
Muggs.
Tara.
Muggs.
Help me.
Muggs. In that movie, don't lie to me. Don't lie to the listener. In that movie, okay, is there a scene where Sasquatches have sex?
Multiple.
I rest my case, Your Honor. It's a weird movie. It's a weird movie.
It's about nature, dude.
Man, we were talking about that OJ doc on Netflix recently. I would love to hear Carl Edwards, because that guy's amazing. The way he talks out of like problems.
Yeah.
I would love to hear him defend Muggs in a court of law about, you know, this man is not a pervert. This man is a family man. This man likes cinema. He was raised in Los Angeles. This is what this man knows. He loves nature. He's open-minded. And he watches Sasquatch sex movies. So that's number three.
Not a sex movie.
Number three, right? I've watched so many movies in my life, dude. I've never seen a movie where Sasquatches have sex. I just want to put that out there. So what's number two on this list? Do we want to guess? Public sex is out. That's number three.
Well, you already guessed it.
Oh, okay, I guess number
two? There you go. BDSM?
Yeah.
Okay, that's number two?
Yeah.
All right.
And I mean, we practice a little bit of that too, so I would say I also fall into that category.
You like that
statistic? Yeah.
But you're what they would call a switch.
I am a switch.
Right.
Yeah. Because sometimes, good job.
I love you. You know what's really funny about the show is like I try to play like host guy. You know, oh yeah, yeah, that's good. That's interesting. And then I'll slip up and expose myself as being a little well read on some of this stuff. But you are a switch. It sounds like. And do you want to explain for the lay people the what a switch is?
Yes. So a switch is someone who likes to do both dominating and submission just at different times. So sometimes I like to dom, sometimes I like to sub. But I would say my general ratio, I probably sub way more. I probably sub like 70% of the time. But, you know, there are some occasions where my husband would be down for me to dom, like he's in a mood. Mm. Then I like that too. I like to switch it up too and play that role, although it's not in my nature to be that like aggressive, but I enjoy it from time to time because I feel like I get to like perform or like be a different person.
Right. What's your favorite thing to have someone do? And just answer honestly. Just bleep Muggs if this is bad. What's your favorite thing to have people do when you're a dom?
Can I say it?
Yeah, say it, and then just bleep it.
Just bleep it.
All right, fine, fine. Write it down. Write it down. We're going to play the write down game. Write down. Or why don't you try to explain it? What is Dr. Tarr's favorite thing to do or have people do as a dom? Just try to explain it like you're, in front of your grandparents.
Tell a man to get on their knees.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
And then
do oral.
Yes.
You like, okay.
I would say it in a lot sexier way, but yes.
Okay.
Well, No. Also, put your pants on.
Get on your knees and my.
Okay. Well, then you just made a mess of yourself.
Yeah, I did.
Now, okay. So.
What minute? You tell him. So
It's 10:45. Also, this poor man's blood pressure. Muggs is very turned on by that. Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, why Muggs is a radio. I really mean this. As much as he may frustrate me from time to time with other things, Of course. I acknowledge that. But he is a radio legend because he's this honest, and that's why I love him having him on the show. I should say.
Yeah.
But Muggs, he's really into that.
Yeah.
That doesn't do anything for me.
I know, different strokes.
But
different
what
folks.
Is that? What is that? I'm so curious. I feel like I'm always pressing on this, but I'm fascinated on the whys, right? So the whys, like where I would like to be the aggressor, right? But I don't, like, there's something about being told what to do. I mean, really, if I'm going to be honest and very self-aware, in all aspects of my life, I don't like being told what to do. But
that's your thing.
But especially in the bedroom. But then Muggs... You love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you love that, if you can say so politely?
Because.
Politely.
Because I think traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tara, traditionally women don't normally do that. It's the male role.
Right.
So when it's switched, when it's reversed, it's awesome.
Yeah. It's like novel. It's new.
Because most of the girls... Or people that I've been with, they're never usually the dom type. And I'm not really, like, I enjoy it, but not more than I like being dominated.
Mm-hmm. A lot of men like it.
Yeah. No.
They
I'm
get
not...
to lose control
mm-hmm.
right. for a second. You know, like, you go out, work all day, make all the decisions, making all the things happen, drive all the way home. Like, maybe you just want to let loose and, like, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, kinks are bigger in places where, like, you just said drive home. And I just think about how stressful LA traffic is. And, like, I'm
it's
wondering
so
if...
so stressful.
Right?
So stressful.
And I wonder if like things like this, like to blow off steam, are bigger out here.
I would say men in metropolitan cities reported more of the likings of the BDSM and like being subs.
Huh.
Like in New York, dominatrix dungeons are so popular.
Yeah.
Because all these like Wall Street men want to go and get stepped on.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And what's the psychology of that? They like to get stepped on. What's that about?
Oh, that's belittling and humiliation. I think it psychologically allows for these men to surrender, because in other aspects of their life, they never get to surrender. And this is the only context they get to surrender. And it actually takes off a mental load to get like humiliated. It's healing for these men to get humiliated and get belittled by this woman who, I mean, you know, they both know, like, he paid her. So by power of resources, like, he has power over her. But yet, you know, he's surrendering. So
I used to be friends with a woman who, for the respect of her privacy, I don't want to be too specific here. But she, I think this is vague enough. I was friends with a woman who was a professor. But at like a very, very, very good school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think some of the best schools you've ever heard of.
Oh, is this in New York?
The school?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to answer that. It's not New York, but I'm not going to get specific. But anyways.
Muggs University of Phoenix Online.
It was a little bit better than that. And she was a brilliant woman.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I loved I would connect. We talked about older women on the show last, or I think 2 weeks ago at this point. Time's flying by. We were talking about older women.
You have always liked older women. Remember when you were a kid, you went to your friend's mom's house?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing that's interesting is like...
Stacy's mom?
Stacy's mom. Yeah, but what I think I liked was I was always sort of like an older soul. Mm-hmm. So like I grew up in a household with my grandparents.
Yeah.
And then my mom worked all day. Mm-hmm. And so I was around my grandparents a lot. And then my I had two girl cousins in the house. One, like the one I was kind of closer to, was 7 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So like I would watch MTV with her when I was like 5 years old. So a lot of my interests are like, you know, like with people older than me. One of my best friends is like 7, 8 years older than me, right?
Yeah.
And I think maybe it was that. And I don't know. I was just always like, my brain always moved real fast and I just found them to be fascinating. But anyways, it would always be like a mental thing that I would connect with these older women, right? And I didn't exclusively date older women. It was just like an aspect of the women I would see. But anyways, this person also doubled as a highly paid dominatrix.
Mm.
And so I always thought that was really interesting, but the things that men would pay her to do were crazy. Mm-hmm. Were crazy. Yeah. Like, I don't even know if I should say some of this stuff. Like, can I say some of the stuff on...
Probably not.
Yeah. But it was like, it was really, really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny being on Loveline and being on the radio because you are in this room and you just get lost in conversation.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of like, wow, I've said, you know. But
well, no. I've had a dominatrix friend told me that a client regularly comes in and have her number two on his chest.
I mean, that's crazy.
And while he like finishes off himself.
What is that? And again, we have like, what is that?
You know, we don't know much about the psychology of scat play.
Okay.
I'm
a scat man.
We don't have a big like sample size to study like scat play. But same goes with anything else that is extremely taboo in our society. I think it's just fun and exciting. Like if you think about the guys that, you know, have tried everything, you know, have all the resources in the world. And this is alleged. So I have to say it's allegedly someone's, I think it's on the internet, but allegedly the virus guy, the antivirus guy is super into number two.
Who's that? What?
McAfee.
Oh, he's dead. I heard about this.
He's dead.
Yeah, but he was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we let the man rest? What are we doing?
No, he was. Look, so anyways.
His virus software will live on forever.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Hey, George Washington, you know what he was into?
He was into number two. But yeah, like going back to just people having all the resources in the world, all the privilege in the world. Like what else can you do that's exciting, you know? When you can do anything and everything.
Yeah, but that's what I think is interesting is this developing sort of out of the modern world we live in where we have access to crazy visuals, increasingly crazy visuals, increasingly crazy drugs, increasingly crazy stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
And so sexuality is being rewired from things that truly turn you on to you needing novelty to turn you on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm like, is that always great or is that a recipe to look yourself in the mirror one day and go, I just did something that is incongruent with my sexual orientation because I needed to do that to get my jollies off. And then, you know, you kind of, when you come down, I mean, there is that there is that come down from horniness.
Why is there S all over my chest?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
In the come down?
Yeah. I don't feel like Superman at all. What's that smell?
Wow.
You want me to pay you for this? What do you mean it was my idea? Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But no, when you come down from that arousal high, which can be, like, at least for men, like, manic. Don't you think? Don't you think, like, sometimes where you're just like, I mean, how many, we've all been there.
We call it post.
I don't think you can say that word.
Can't say it. Post something clarity.
Post ejaculate?
Yeah, post ejaculate clarity.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really odd. I mean, stand-up comedians have made the joke. I think Andrew Schulz has made this joke, and so I'm not stealing it, but he makes the joke. He's like, girls think we're like playing games, but we truly don't know if we like you or not. Like, because our bodies are like, we love you, but we won't know. In a weird way, until that post-ejaculate clarity. I mean, again, we're making light of it. But it's like kind of, it does feel a little manic. Or have you ever had that moment where you're just like, you're having some crazy experience intimately, and then you come down from that sort of manic state, and you're just like, this was crazy. Like, this was wild. Like, wow, look at this. Like, we made a mess of this place, you know?
I'm usually just passed out.
He's an honest man.
I'm just picturing Mugs.
Snoring.
Hello. Like, just slow zoom, right? Like, the woman comes back from the bathroom. Just, hello, darkness, my old friend.
There was no time for him to have any kind of clarity because he's out.
No, she comes back from the bathroom, and Mugs is sprawled out unconscious. I hurt myself today.
I've post-ejaculate narcolepsy.
is that rude? Is that rude?
No strip.
By the way, we got to get to number one. What's number one on the top three kinks in America list?
Group sex.
No way.
Yeah, so threesomes. Like, almost every single person that has been surveyed, well, let's not exaggerate. Let's be factual. About 70%, which is a lot of people, of the participants in the study have said that they have this fantasy or kink.
That's got to be men, right? Because you know what's interesting?
Women too.
We put up a poll, and not that we're anything, but like we put up a poll on Loveline recently, and it was like, what do you think about threesomes, basically? There are all these different options. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't one woman that wanted a threesome. Yeah. Every woman responded. And there was actually a pretty decent response to that prompt.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, nope. And every man was like, yes.
Yeah.
But what do you think the woman's motivation would be? Obviously, the man is just sort of like, you know, we're always just trying to spread our seed and whatnot. Yeah. But what's the woman's motivation?
Attention is one of them. Like getting
from two men.
Of attention. Yeah. Mm. Because what else, like what other scenarios in life do you get that? Like two men, like giving you full attention for like 1 hour.
Right.
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, you don't even get that on this show.
Yeah. No, I don't. I am completely dry.
That's funny.
Completely dry.
I love when I think I have the Mugs joke and I don't. Sorry. And then you'll be you're completely dry on this show.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I am.
Right. That's what you get with two men with ADHD.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we're just gonna start. If Mugs and I ever had a threesome with a woman, we would just start arguing about something, and she would just be like, "What is this?"
She would be in an Uber going home.
Oh, totally. I wouldn't even notice.
I said I was going to the front. No, you said you were doing the back. What was happening?
Yeah, I think so. For women, I think the pool is attention and experiment. Some women are very experimental, me included, and I think, you know, you just want to know what it's like.
Is would that go for swinging too? Is that group sex, swinging?
Yeah.
And why, like, if you believe what you read on porn sites, why are all the swingers in Florida? I feel like that's the only, like, that's the only thing I've ever found that were, like, geographically genred, where it would always be, like, Florida swingers going at, it's never, like, guy in Indiana gives it to this girl. It's, you know what I mean? It's more universal. But swinger content is always like Tampa swingers, you know?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
You know, I see a lot of that. You know, I think it's correlated to older individuals.
Okay.
And there's a lot more older people.
Because they're like, F it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when people say like, oh, when I go to a swingers resort, right? Like, what kind of people are there? And there's always like all different types of people. But I would say, to be honest here and not to oversell, there are usually a lot more older people at swingers
resorts.
At
swingers parties. Yeah. I mean, you were telling us a couple weeks ago with Dr. Joshua Gonzalez here that you go to sex parties specifically with elderly people.
Well, yeah, but sex parties are very different from swingers resorts.
Right.
Like,
right.
Swingers Resorts is a whole resort constructed and ran and operated. Like, I mean, these are multi-million dollar, like, business.
Right.
Right? Like,
they got pickleball. They got...
Yeah, they have... They do. They have hot tubs. Like, they have everything.
Wow.
And it's all, like, everybody's naked. So there's this place in Palm Springs as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And everybody's naked. Like, it's nudity, like, clothing optional.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere, and it's typically older individuals.
Okay. Well, sounds like nothing I'm into. When we come back on Loveline, we're going to talk about how your parents dictate whether or not you have a good sex life.
Mm-hmm.
That's next on Loveline.
Loveline will be right back. Loveline on K-Rock.
No one else can find the trouble so quickly or repair it so economically.
Loveline's coming right back. Hang on.
KROQ.
This is Loveline.
Back on Loveline, Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, producer Mugs. And we told you just before the last break that your parents have a whole heck of a lot to do with your sex life, which is a wonderful thought. You've already told us you are completely dry right now, Dr. Tara. And we just wanted to make sure you're still dry. So, I mean, we've talked about losing erections on this show quite a bit. I feel like the fastest way to lose an erection is to think about your parents during sex. You know? That's why I don't like girls saying daddy. Don't call me daddy. I don't want to think about your dad. I'm definitely not your dad. What was that book, that children's book, where, like, what was it? Like a duck was walking around? Are you my mom?
That's I've
a
never
sad
seen
book. What book was that? Can you look that up, Muggs? What book
what
was that? Are
in
You
that
My
book?
Mother?
Like, was it an orphan duck?
I don't know, man, but that's a messed up book. That was a big book when I was a little kid. Are You My Mother? And it was like, wow. It was like, it was this duck or something, and it would walk around and ask, like, what was it? Are You My Mother?
It was
a dog, not a duck.
Well, no, the duck is on the dog's head, and it looks like
it's Dr. Seuss.
No, but it says by P.D. Eastman. That's what I'm confused about. It's written by this guy named P.D. Eastman, but he, like, Dr. Seuss, like, recommends it or, like, endorses it.
So what is it about?
Well, you know what else Dr. Seuss endorses, and I think I've talked about this in Loveline, is when children are alone, a cat, a man cat, so sort of like, what do you call that when it's like part human, part animal?
Anamorph.
Yeah, so an anamorph, right, an adult anamorph, breaking into a home where the parents are away, and then bringing two smaller people with him, and then destroying the home and taking advantage of the children, and then leaving a mess for the parents to come home to. That's Cat in the Hat.
What?
That's right.
It's kind of weird, right?
That is right.
It's kind of weird that that idea occurred to that guy, and he wrote a whole story about it.
Are You My Mother is a story about a hatchling bird. His mother, thinking her egg will stay in her nest where she left it, leaves her egg alone and flies off to find food. The baby bird hatches while the mother is away. The hatchling does not understand where his mother is, so he goes to look for her. While he cannot yet fly, he walks, and in his search, he asks a kitten, who says nothing, a hen, a dog, and a cow if they are his mother, but none of them are. Unable to give up, he does not walk, but runs as he sees an old car, which he realizes certainly cannot be his mother. In desperation, the hatchling
calls... Mom, is that you?
The hatchling
calls out... Oh, it's an Oldsmobile. Sorry. I thought you were my mom.
The hatchling calls out to a boat and then an airplane, but neither respond. And at last,
he's yelling at planes.
He approaches and climbs onto the teeth of an enormous steam shovel,
calling to it,
Mother, Mother, here I am, Mother. However, after it belches from its exhaust stack, the bird, realizing the steam shovel wasn't his mother after all, says it's a snort and tries to escape. But the machine shudders and grinds into motion.
Are you reading the whole story?
Yeah, this is
okay,
the whole thing.
Stop.
Like, I want to know the ending.
Okay, yeah. You read the ending. I bet it's great. But that was the book. And by the way, I also think that there's a guy on the side of the 101 freeway in Tarzana that I see sometimes, and he asks planes if they're his mother too, and he yells, mother, mother. And there's this. I'm saying there's a universal appeal. It applies to a lot of people, this story. I also think there's an analogy of looking. There's a great line in a Counting Crows song that I love, where it says, some of us wait so long waiting for mothers to come, like waiting for, you know, people to save us, right?
Yeah.
If you were to rank, Dr. Tara, like the top three things, top three things that determine your behavior dating, don't you think your relationship with your, whatever your orientation is, if you're attracted, if you're heterosexual, your opposite sex or gendered parent, don't you think that relationship dictates almost everything? Don't you think that's the number one thing, number two thing that's going to dictate how you approach the opposite sex if you are heterosexual?
I would say the number one thing is your parents.
But I think specifically...
the opposite sex parent.
Yeah, because I'll give you a perfect example. I recently, a buddy of mine was going through something where... I can't get too specific here, but he had a quarrel with his girlfriend that I felt he was asking me my opinion. I said, dude, she's overreacting, right? Mm-hmm. And she tends to overreact. She's one of those girlfriends. And I wasn't saying this accusingly, but I said, does she fight with her dad a lot? And he goes, yeah, how'd you know that? And I just think if that's how you know how to interact with a man and a man you love, then that's what you're going to do. You're going to start fights. Conversely, if your dad just laid down the law and it was like no conversation, what dad says goes, you're going to have a more submissive, sort of docile woman in relation to men she dates.
Mm-hmm. Or your dad asks you about your opinions about different, you know, world topics all the time. Then you become an assertive woman like me.
Oh, is that what happened?
Oh, yeah. My dad is very inquisitive about like what I thought about different things.
So when you were a child, was he like, what do you think about this Iraq stuff?
No, but like, you know, if I say I like watermelon, he'll be like, what do you like about it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like
you said, like world issues. What did you say? I was imagining like
worldly things.
Oh, worldly like,
yeah,
things.
Yeah, because
that's
we go
worldly.
Well, no, when we go travel, when I'm older, like maybe like 12, right? We go travel. We go to Italy. He will be like, you know, why did you think all the statues are men?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like.
What did you think of the Watergate scandal, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm imagining like a 12-year-old Tara, politics. And he's like, so this invasion of Baghdad is crazy, isn't it?
No, we never talk politics. We have different ideas about what good politics is.
Right.
But I would say, yeah, the number one variable predicting your romantic behavioral pattern is your relationship with your parents.
Now, but there's also, because I'm always thinking about value for the listener, right? Mm-hmm. So there's also something I think to take away from that, where if you are raising... maybe anybody, is ask them questions. That's mm-hmm. important, it seems. Yeah. So like empower the child with offering opinions.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you have anyone listening that have children, asking question is the best form of building their self-esteem.
Yeah.
Because they know they have the agency to share and what they feel and what they think matters.
Well, and I think looking back a lot, I think of being young and my mom sort of treating me as like a friend at times. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because it's kind of like a double-edged sword where I'm like, probably inappropriate at times. But no. But in all seriousness, I'm grateful because you were asking about like me dating older people from time to time in my life. I think because I was treated like an equal in a lot of ways as a child, I have gratitude for that because I was never like, she never baby talked me. She was, you know what I mean? So from a really young age, like I was aware of popular culture and I was aware of like, I don't know, like just the world mm-hmm. because of how she spoke to me. And mm-hmm. maybe that was inadvertent, right? But it's interesting to think about that.
Yeah, 100%.
So how does this, you were telling us.
That, well, I mean, we were talking about the top three, right?
Top three
this
what?
Is your ADHD.
No, that
do
was
you remember?
I do remember. I was resetting. I was resetting
the
it.
Two of you? Okay.
I beg of you.
That'd be a good game.
Three.
That'd be a game. You give us a topic at the beginning of a segment and see if we can remember.
That's like the old radio thing. It's like, hey, name the last five songs, you know? I'm just gonna say there's some sketchy characters outside of Carrick right now. They are bulletproof windows.
My friends.
Though.
They're my friends.
Are they? They're waiting to pick you up. You were talking about, we did top three kinks last segment, Tara. What I'm talking about is what you've brought to the table here. Where you consider...
No. Let me correct you. This segment, within this segment, you said, can you share top three things that contribute to like how people...
Oh, I apologize. And, okay, yes. I got confused with the top three. So go on.
Yes. So the first thing I would say is your relationship with your parents and the interactions you've had since your childhood. The second thing is I think it's genetics. There's a lot of like things about our genetic that determines like who we are. And a part of it is affectionate behaviors. There are researchers, one of them is at University of Arizona, U of A, Dr. Corey Floyd, that studies affection and found that a lot of times the way we're able to give and receive affection is very much genetics. So related to like the ability to maintain or process like oxytocin, things like that. So there are like genetic reasons to why some people are like cold and some people are more warm and friendly and charismatic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So that's the second reason. And I think the second top, what was it? Like top three.
Yeah, top three. Well, I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
So how important is your first sexual experience in terms of dictating who you are?
I'm going to go there next.
Oh, okay.
The third one is, I would say, early sexual and relational experience. If you've had like your first time having sex was a trauma, or like if you were forced, or like if you did something that it was a trauma, a traumatic experience, that will stay with you for a long time until you work on healing from it.
Well, how does it manifest? You say it stays with you.
In so many different ways. Like one of them could be over-sexualization of yourself, because people might feel like, you know, oh, men or yeah, when men or women like only want sex from me, so might as well make myself like a sexual object. Mm-hmm. And you over sexualize yourself and you might become someone that have a lot of sex, right? Hypersexual. So that can be one way it manifests.
And is that in an attempt to reclaim your sexuality that may have been robbed of you from the trauma or the non-consensual first experience?
Yeah. But if you become a hypersexual, then it's not necessarily like a great way to reclaim your trauma.
Right.
Yeah. Because then it becomes a different issue.
Yeah, of course.
You're solving an issue with an issue.
There's a Jane's Addiction song, Jane Says. You know, Jane says she only knows if somebody wants her. She wants him if they want her.
Mm. You got to sing it as Perry Farrell.
Yeah. I could never.
I need to listen to this song. I feel like I need to listen to more.
Yeah, I'll get you a K-Rock playlist.
By the way, if you want a really great video, if you're watching the podcast on K-Rock's YouTube, check out the Perry Farrell interview we did last year. That's a trip.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of parents, he tells some pretty wild stories. And then how else would it manifest? Or is that typically how it manifests? And I'm asking this because if somebody's listening right now and they've been through a traumatic first sexual experience, they might go, well, that doesn't apply to me. Mm-hmm. But maybe if you cover some ground here, they can go, oh, I do that, right?
Yeah. So two other ways that came to mind from the literature that I've read. The second way it manifests would be like extreme sexual anxiety and voluntary celibacy. So like, if you've had such a traumatic sexual experience when you were young, it is possible that when you become young adult, you kind of become a recluse, like you remove yourself from like sexual encounters within the dating or relational development process. So that's the second one. And then the third one, I would say that I've seen in literature is like, so we have people who have a lot of sex, right? Hypersexuals. We have people who don't have sex, like people that have extreme sexual anxiety. And then I think there's also people that tend to become dismissive. So like have an insecure, dismissive attachment style. If you had a terrible relationship or terrible sexual experience when you were younger, or your first love was terrible and they like, you know, did you wrong and manipulated you, then you could become completely removed from the idea of anyone is trustworthy or anyone is going to love me for who I am authentically, then you could protect yourself as a defense mechanism, protect yourself by being dismissive. I don't need anybody. Like, I'm better than you. I don't need anybody. And that is a tool for people to not get hurt again. However, what they don't know is you end up getting hurt anyways because you push everyone else away.
And do you ever see instances where somebody's first experience is traumatic, non-consensual, an assault, and they go back to that person?
Yeah.
What is that like? Because for people listening that have experienced that, what's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like the, what is it called? The syndrome?
Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah.
Is it
it's almost like you go back to the person that like abused you because you've been beaten down so much to believe that like you are reliant on this person's approval. So you go back there to like get their approval. And that's like the only way you like kind of fill your like dopamine tank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or maybe you come off that first experience so fearful that the little bit of familiarity, as god-awful as it was, that might speak to the person?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People staying in their patterns is a huge problem.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, like I have a friend that came to mind back in Arizona that would always date men that are just assholes.
Yeah.
Like men that would like, you know, talk down on her. You know, they will say, someone said like she's, you know, getting a PhD, quote unquote, like she's getting a PhD.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah. I'm like, that's so rude.
I had a friend
in front of everybody, like in a group.
I had a friend that would get turned on, larger friend. I just want to be as vague as possible. but it's not funny. A larger friend, and the people she would sleep with would like say mean things about or her size, but she would like it. What's that?
That could be a way to reclaim it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Because it's kind of like, you know, the F word in the gay community, right? Like, it used to be used, it's still used in a hateful way, but yet, like, I reclaim the word.
Right.
And I reclaim, so for them, it could be like, I reclaim my size. Like, I am proud of it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, it's okay, you don't like it. It reminds me that I like me.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. So you were talking that we have a Love Bites, which is my favorite segment that you do here, where you really teach us in very quick time a fun or maybe an interesting sexual fact. Do you want to share the Love Bites that we're kind of talking about, how parents relate and household affects sexuality?
Yeah. So for today's Love Bites, I did this research two summers ago, and we were looking into what variables predict young adults, particularly Gen Zs. We were looking at Gen Zs. What variables predict their sexual attitude and sexual behaviors? And we found that one of the strongest variables is family sex communication. Have you ever heard of this term?
No.
So family sex communication is a concept that revolves around how your family or your parents communicate about sex and sexuality in the household, and like what kind of environment regarding the topic of sex did you grow up in, and that influences how you feel about sex as young adults for Gen Zs, particularly that I studied. So for example, if you grew up in a family that is communicative, right? Like if there's a sex scene in a movie, your mom might go, like, you know, with a daughter or even a son, like, you know, what did you think about that? Did you think like something was missing? Like, you know, for example, if the movie didn't show like any clitoral stimulation, right? Like if the parents are open-minded and communicative and not like acting like it's a shameful thing, then the kid grows up to become a lot more sexually confident and score higher in sexual self-esteem. So when we look at the correlations, like statistical significance between two variables, we found people who grew up in communicative families tend to have higher sexual self-esteem.
So, but how many parents are going to like stop the movie and really
well,
say
no,
that?
Well, no. I'm not. That's like an extreme example.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even if you in your family, your parents like kiss each other on the cheeks, you know, maybe your dad like, you know, kind of tap mom on the butt to like show affection.
Right.
Then you grow up to feel like these things are normal and it's okay. However, if you're like me, I grew up in a family where my mom would fast forward sex scenes. Like if we're all sitting there and watching a movie, like any of these rom-coms, and if there's a sex scene, my mom will fast forward that scene. So then that gives me signal or cues in my mind, in my developing brain, by the way, as a 12-year-old, that that's not okay. Like whatever they're doing, it's not okay. It's shameful. You should be ashamed, right? So for me, I grew up in that sort of environment, and I know that it became a problem in my early 20s.
When are parents going to learn the worst thing you can do is hide things from your kids? Because I remember, you know, growing up in the 90s, 2000s, whenever I wasn't allowed to listen to something, I am going to go out of my way. Or I remember to listen to it. Or I remember when pro wrestling was like, pro wrestling is real popular now, mm-hmm. but in the 90s, it was really edgy.
Oh, yeah.
Like edgy. Like they would do crazy stuff.
I saw that documentary on Netflix.
Oh, the Vince McMahon one? Yeah, so you remember. Yeah. And it was like Jerry Springer and anybody listening, if you were around in the late 1990s, it was just a crazy time in pop culture where just things were real edgy. That was kind of like the sort of vibe du jour, if you will. And but I remember like I wasn't allowed to watch it, and kids in my grade weren't allowed to watch it, and all I wanted to do was stay up till 9 p.m. and watch wrestling on TV.
Yeah.
And it's similar with sex, I'm sure. Now, let's say you grew up in a house and like sex was mm-hmm. just not mm-hmm. talked about.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
So you can grow up to become a very sexually anxious young adult. You may have a wrong idea of like what sexual intimacy should look like. And you become very easily to manipulate because you don't have any like factual information or even like good attitude surrounding it. So you don't have like the confidence to approach any sort of like sexual intimacy episode. So what happens is like you can become almost like prey to to people who like are looking for someone to manipulate.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I was in a couple of highly manipulative relationships in my early 20s that I at the time thought was a good relationship. And then afterwards, and after working with my therapist for a long time, just always unpacking these relationships and how it has affected me throughout my 20s. And it really kind of all goes back to the way my parents engage in sexuality. So one of them was like fast forwarding the movie. Another example would be like my parents would never show like physical affection in front of me. Like, did your parents show physical affection? Like, did they kiss each other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They didn't really have that. They didn't have that talk with me. I kind of figured it out on my own, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. But yeah. They didn't act like affection or being sexual was bad.
No.
Yeah.
No. I think when I think about this, like, I don't remember sex being explicitly talked about, but my mom really never, because I grew up with my mom, and my mom really never censored anything. But also, in fairness to my mom, she worked all day. Mm-hmm. So I was like, unsupervised, and then one yeah, probably made
all the porn at 10
well,
years old.
Well, that's what I mean. And then what's crazy is like my two best friends, or two of my best friends in middle school, one had a sister like 10 years older, so she's out of the house by the time we're in third grade. And then my other friend was also unsupervised, and so it was like 3 8-year-olds doing whatever we wanted.
Wow.
But what's interesting is I think how that manifested was like when it came time for adolescence, like I remember I was like, me and that friend were like, we would go to the mall in sixth grade when no one was doing this. And we would go to the mall and like get girls' screen names, because back then we didn't have cell phones.
Yeah.
So you get our screen name from AOL. And then we would like, I had a girlfriend from another town in sixth grade. So the point of that story being like, maybe because I was familiarized with sex and women and sexuality from a very young age,
yeah,
not complaining about it, was pretty cool. that by the time I was 11 or 12 years old, I was like, yeah, like, I don't want to, because I do remember that.
Yeah,
I do remember,
you were very advanced.
I do remember like my friends would want to like play Yu-Gi-Oh cards or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And then me and my other buddy, who like the other unsupervised buddy, would be like, dude, like, let's go to the mall, man. There's like chicks at the mall. Yeah, like we would walk around, and this is so funny thinking back. We would walk around until we saw girls we thought were our age. Because you remember that mug's like, if you're 12, you know, like, yo, that 15-year-old's not even gonna entertain me, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'd walk around.
You haven't hit puberty.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so weird thinking back to like, because you know, in your memory, you're always like you. Like when you think back, you're just you. You're not like a smaller version of you. You're just you.
Right.
And it's so weird to think back to like, man, that was must have been so weird. Or you know what I think about is the movie theaters, because that's where we would go. We would go. We would scam on girls' mugs. That means making out, if you didn't hear the other episode. But we would make out, and I'm like, man, that would have been so weird. Like 12-year-olds, like you're watching a movie, 12-year-olds behind you just like going at it. I'd be like, that'd be terrible. That'd be terrible. Because we would even go to the movies and we wouldn't even go see a movie we wanted to go see. The hustle back then was you'd go on moviephone.com and you'd be like, I need to maximize my makeout time. So you'd just go to the longest movie. So I remember being in like a Under the Tuscan Sun.
You were so advanced.
I was just, I was a little bit of a planner. But we would see ridiculous long movies just to make out for longer, because that's the only place you could make out, but probably awful for everyone.
Kevin saw
us.
Titanic 3 times in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to get the second base.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? You know what's funny about that? You know what's really funny about that and goes along, and this, I think, ties a bow in the conversation before we go to break. I remember the boob scene was on the second VHS.
Oh, so you just start with the second VHS.
Yeah, me and my buddies would be like, when are we going to watch that first VHS?
We just want the boob scene.
Yeah, I don't need to like see him like, you know, do the King of the World thing.
Kate,
like,
Winslet.
Yeah, man. That's pretty crazy.
Is that the one in the cart? Like the hand, like...
No. He paints her.
Yeah, when he was sketching her.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to draw me like one of your French girls.
Beautiful breasts.
Yeah, that's weird. Those probably were like the first breasts I ever saw.
Those were those hers, or were the stunt breasts?
CGI.
Stand-in breasts.
It could be stunt breasts.
Maybe. You're ruining my childhood right now. We'll be back with more Loveline.
After a Loveline, the craziest question.
What's the craziest question you've ever gotten on Loveline?
Loveline with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara. We'll be right back. Back to Loveline on K-Rock.
With Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
More.
833-LOVE-191.
back on Loveline. Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, producer Muggs. We are wrapping up the episode. And, well, you know, Loveline, this show, this franchise, if you will, this brand, it was really predicated on phone calls. Mm-hmm. And it was predicated on the service that it provided the public in terms of their inquisitions. And we are very fortunate to have someone as well-read and knowledgeable as Dr. Tara here on Loveline with us. And we're going to utilize her right now and answer some of your questions. Now, these questions came courtesy of Dr. Tara's social media. That is at L-U-V Bytes
yeah.
C-O. Is it dot C-O?
Yeah, at lovebytes.co.
Okay, now I haven't looked at these. We're going to run through these. Now, do you think the people, do they want the username or probably not? Nah, they probably don't want the username.
No,
they don't want
they
the username.
They never want the username.
They never want the username. Okay, so we're just going to run through these. I haven't read them. I don't know if they're going to be appropriate or not. We have no idea what these people asked, but hundreds of people did respond to this prompt. So let's get down to it. This first question is, what percentage of relationships try to eventually go monogamish or more open, tired of scaring people?
I don't understand the question. What do you mean?
What percentage of relationships try to eventually go monogamish or more open, do you think?
I would say about 10%.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. And that's just like, obviously, just to be very clear, that's not a statistic necessarily. It's more of like a gauge of your feeling.
It is. It's a guess-educated guess. Educated guess.
Now, is that a result of more sexually liberated people in the world now, or is it maybe a result of pornography and people wanting a variety based off that?
I think people are more sexually liberated and people are learning that monogamy is not the only option.
Okay. This next question... How do I slice up our marriage? I think you mean spice up. How do I slice up? How do I spice up our marriage when a newborn is involved? This is a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a kid, but mm-hmm. I can imagine. I mean, I have dogs in it, and it impacted mm-hmm. my relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, dogs.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a child? I can't. So how do you navigate that?
There are three. I've talked about this quite often, both on my page and like in different like magazine articles. But there are three practices that I always tell young parents that they need to try to do. One of them is quick oral, like giving each other, but not penetrative quickies, just because if I recommend that to a young mom, like her vagina isn't ready for, you know, like for a quickie like that. So I always say like, quick orals are always like good way to check in with each other and stay sexually connected. The second one is sexting, because not everything sexual has to be like penetration or having sex. It can just feel sexual. And in order to feel more sexual when you have a 1-year-old at home is to start like sexting each other. If you're concerned about like what to say, what to do, you know, there are lots of online articles. If you go like how to sex, like what are some examples, they'll give you a bunch. On my website, like my blogs, have a bunch of examples that you can like copy and paste and text it to your husband or wife. And the third thing to consider, I would say, to continue to focus on the relationship strengthening part. Because if you were thinking about like who has the most sex, it's usually people that have a strong relationship, especially after babies and having children. So whatever that strengthened your relationship, maybe that's having a ritual, like every morning you spend 15 minutes together in bed and, you know, cuddling, and just you really value that time. Or maybe it's once a week we get a nanny and we go on a date night, or even at home date night, but like we make it special. So creating like a relationship strengthening ritual can also bring you closer together, like sexually.
Right. Now, you said when after the baby, it might be sensitive. The vagina might be sensitive for quickie sex.
Or painful. Yeah.
So how long, I'm curious, like how long does a woman after she gives birth have to wait for that pain to go away?
Some people, so it depends on how fast someone heals, because, you know, some people can heal really fast. It just depends on their bodies. I would say it ranges from anywhere like, you know, 1 month to like 2 years.
Wow.
I've seen a woman who was like, yeah, I just, I feel like it hurts when we have penetration and I just don't have any desire.
Wow. And now you also mentioned something there that I think is really valuable and really helpful for people that may not be comfortable with the idea of sexting, or they might need a creative prompt. You said you can go to your website. What website is that?
Lovebites.co.
So it's L-U-V.
Yeah, it's my website and my social media.
So, but if it, like if you're a woman or a man that wants to learn how to sex, what do? They go on lovebites.co. That's L-U-V. Bites.co.
Yeah.
And where do they click?
Click on blog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And they'll find, are these sexting prompts?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's a great idea. Because I don't think, like, you can't talk to AI about sexting, right? You can't talk to ChatGPT.
I don't think so.
No,
ChatGPT, I think it will say violate community guidelines.
That's so weird. Yeah. I think it's weird that you censor sexuality.
Same with social media.
Very weird.
Those Literatica authors are sure safe from AI.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's weird. All right, this next question. Can real making love sex be a true replacement for wanting to swing with your partner one day? I don't entirely understand that, but...
People who have the desire to have group sex will always have the desire to have group sex.
Mm.
Until they have tried it. And maybe they try it and they really like it, or maybe they try it and they hate it. So it just depends. But if you have the desire, you'll always have the desire. So can having sex with your partner replace it? No, because it's a separate desire.
Right.
Yeah.
So how many people that want an open relationship, they have no experience with an open relationship, but they want an open relationship, how many of those people may just not want to date their partner anymore?
I would say out of all the people that try open or monogamish, I would say maybe a third, like 30% of those people did it for the wrong reasons. Like they don't really feel attracted to their partner anymore, so they want to open up their relationship to like fix their marriage when in fact the relationship was already like on the way out.
Right.
So that ends up like, you know, they end up getting a divorce or breaking up, which gives bad reputation to open relationships and the people that practice it mindfully.
Okay. This next question, why is it that when I self-pleasure, it feels good, but when me and him do it, it isn't the same? So I guess this is a solo masturbation compared to group.
For a woman.
For a man. I don't know who this is, but it's, you know, they're doing it with a man. But yeah, why is it that when they self-pleasure, it feels good, but when they do it with him, their partner, it isn't the same in their words?
If it's a woman, I'm willing to bet that it's because their partner doesn't know how to stimulate the clitoris and the vulva. And so having penetrative sex is not as pleasurable when the whole system isn't warmed up and turned on. But if it's a male, like if it's a gay man, I would say you might be watching porn while you masturbate, and like you're way more stimulated by that than like having sex with your partner.
Isn't that so interesting though? And that's I think we keep getting at on the show, which is just endlessly fascinating to me, is the same problem, depending on the gender and the orientation. The solution is the cause is completely different. So you could have the same problem as a lesbian, a straight man, everything in between, but the reason is probably different based off your gender and your sexual psychology and orientation. Yeah. That's interesting. Now, could this also be interpreted? Because I interpreted it a slightly different way, but you could have absolutely been right. But just in case, let's say they're self-pleasuring, that feels good, but then maybe they pleasure themselves at the same time as their partner pleasuring themselves, so sort of mutual masturbation, but you're not masturbating each other, you're each masturbating yourself. What would you say to that person that can't enjoy it when someone else is there?
If I have to guess, it is probably the like feeling insecure, the sense of like you feel insecure. You don't want anyone to like observe you, you know, working on yourself and orgasming and the face you make, the body like movement that you're doing. So it probably comes from insecurity.
Now, excuse me, I didn't get the name out. This is anonymous. I almost just read the name. You know, it's funny because I'm used to like fan questions on music shows, and I write like, Julie from Florida wants to know, what's your favorite color? You know? This person said, what sex toys do you recommend?
Oh, a clitoral vibrator, 100%. Like all women and men should have clitoral vibrator.
What would I do with it?
Use it on a woman.
Oh, okay. the next person.
Even Mox knows.
The next person. Well, you said women and men, and I was like, well, how could I use it? How can I get in on that fun?
You can actually use it. I have male friends and clients that use it on like their nipples.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and also use it around their anus for stimulation.
Why don't I like my nipples touched?
Because it's your problem.
That's such a great job, by the way.
Oh, I know. Trust me.
He's logging him. He's logging him. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. He's Kenny Loggins over here. He's logging him.
I just hear drops.
Now, yeah, so why does that... I wanted to joke around with my buddy there. Why don't I like my nipples touch?
Some people feel it's overstimulating. It makes them sensitive. It makes them feel like ticklish over...
It makes me feel icky. It makes me feel icky. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, like bumping your funny bone or something. I'm like, oh, I don't like...
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder what that is.
You're probably going to find other places on your body that's more arousing that some other people might not like. Like, is there a place on your body that's arousing?
Yeah, the lots.
Well, apart from the obvious, like, is there, like, you know, I don't know, your ear or...
No.
You know, your back of your neck.
Maybe my neck.
Yeah.
I feel like my butt is very sensitive.
Your butt?
Yeah.
So do you get, like, butt massage?
Yeah, I love a good butt massage.
Yeah.
Love a good butt massage. I'm getting excited thinking about a butt massage right now.
If you don't have a Theragun, this is not an ad, but I just love Theragun, like, on the butt. It feels so good.
Yeah, so much tension comes from my butt.
Yeah.
A lot of tension in my butt. So no, there is, though.
There's so many. You just got, like, four.
We're good for the year.
Yeah. So much tension from my
butt. And by the way, I don't have a clitoris right now. But
you did,
I did. I did. At one point, I had a clitoris.
I mean, you can argue that you still have the clitoris because your tip of the penis is your clitoris.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's bigger than that. All right. This next guy wants to know, what is most girls' favorite sex position?
If we're talking general, like, mass appeal, I'm going to say lifted missionary. Because it allows for deeper penetration and maximum pleasure for vaginal orgasm. So putting a pillow under the butt would be my number one.
Oh, that's a cheat code.
Yeah.
That's a cheat code.
Angle up like 45 degrees.
And that's for the G-spot, right?
Yep.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. I've read about all this stuff. I've never done any of this. Also, I just want to say, you have some young fans, dude.
I do. I think my fan base is like...
That's good. That's
high
good.
High school.
Well, because you know what's funny is like 30 years ago, when these same kids were listening to Loveline, they had to pick up a telephone and they had to call in, but now they can just reach you on here. It's hilarious. Right. POV, that's a good social clip. POV, guy just finds out about the internet. all right, this next question. When did you know he was the one? Good for that person. That's a romantic question. All these other heathens, but yeah, when did you know? When did you? Do you mind? I don't know. I don't want to pry into personal.
I don't mind at all.
Okay. When did you know that Brent was the one?
I knew that he was the one from the very first time we had an argument.
Was it about?
And it was something very small, but I think we saw the situation differently. It was we were in Utah for snowing. Snowboarding.
For snowing?
You knew what she meant.
Were you snowing? For snowing?
Boarding.
For snowing? Okay.
We went snowboarding.
That's cool. You can do that here, does it not?
Snowboarding.
There's a guy downtown.
So we were snowboarding. Anyways, like, it's a long story. Long story short, you know, he went on like double black diamonds. For those of you that don't snowboard, it's like a really hard one.
And then I went
on a green.
And then you're like, I came out to Utah and the bag's gone.
All right. It's snowboarding.
Right.
So anyways, I went on the green one, but then like he went up again and then I was just kind of by myself at the lodge, like where everyone gets beer and hang out. So I was just kind of by myself there, but then I made new friends, like this big group of guys that are playing cards. So I joined them and I taught them a new card game.
How long had you and Brent been dating?
Early. I don't remember specifically, but
months
in early. Yeah.
Yeah, this would bother me, but go on.
But yeah. Anyways, but he left me, so I'm like, I found myself like a way to entertain myself.
Did he realize he left you though?
He did not.
Okay.
Because for him, it was just like he asked me if I want to come with him,
right?
And I said no, I can't because I don't have that kind of skill.
Guys.
No, because I didn't have the kind of skill to go on double black diamond.
Yeah.
So I was afraid. So
for the record, I've never snowboarded or skied in my life, so even know how any of this works.
It's very hard. Yeah. So instead, he should have just been like, you know what? This is our first time together. I'll go on the green with you. I'll hang out with you. Not like, F this, I'm gonna go on my own path because it's so much more fun, and then she can take care of herself because she's independent.
Right. Right?
Like, so we saw it differently. And so that night, we fought about that. But the way I and he argue is typically very rational, and it's like, who can come up with like the most rational answer? Like, who's more, makes more sense?
You argue for reason.
We're not yelling, like we're like being super rational, but also like we're trying to win by like rational arguments. So I was telling him that, you know, like considering it's early in the relationship, it behooves you being more considerate towards what I need because we are in a new relationship together.
Right.
You're not here with your buddies, bros, and I will feel more taken care of and loved if you were spending time with me this vacation that we come together, two of us.
Yeah, she's still not over this, I can tell. She's getting very worked up. Can I be honest? And this is all in the past, obviously. Yeah. But was there any part of you that felt slighted by Brent? So you were like, I'll make friends with these guys.
Oh, no. I honestly,
not at all?
Even if it was a group of women, I would make friends with them. It's just that there were no women in the lodge drinking beer. It was just a bunch of men. So, and I was alone. So I saw that they were playing cards and they were right next to me and I was just eating and I was watching them. They're like, do you want to join? I'm like, yeah. And so I then joined them playing cards. Like, that's all. But anyway, so we argued. But what I love and when I fell in love and I knew he was the one was when he then immediately, like after having like a very passionate position, like his own position, like, listen, like you're an independent woman, blah, 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 his argument. He immediately apologized and said, you know what? You're right. Like your perspective is the more correct one in this scenario, and I should have done what you were expecting me to do. And this will never happen again. And next time, I will do that.
That's awesome. Had he ever been married before?
Has he? No.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's just interesting that like led to
He didn't even have serious relationships. Like when I met him, he was just in a bunch of different like.
But that's cool though.
Short-term relationships.
But that's cool though. So that like was a lesson learned. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for me, it was like, wow, a man that apologizes immediately and say, "I will never do it again, and I will do what you want to do." I'm like, I'm in love.
Do you think the one is problematic? That concept of the one. Do you believe in the one?
I do.
Okay, you do. But is that more of like, is that almost like religion? It's a personal relationship with that concept? Would you, or what kind of advice would you give as a sexual health expert on people who have that belief that there is a one and only?
I don't think there's one and only. I think you come to this life and you have multiple soulmates and they come into your life at different times and they give you different lessons. And ultimately, you'll find a soulmate that is meant to be with you for a long period of time.
Mm.
And I think that's just my person. I found my soulmate that will be with me a long period of time. Doesn't mean earlier in my 20s, I actually found other soulmates that was just supposed to be with me for 2 years.
Oh, so you were saying that you're supposed to be with Brent for a very long time. But would you go so far as to say you're supposed to be with Brent for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
Oh, you would go. Okay.
I would.
I mean, is it just a semantical thing where you said you believe in the one, but you don't believe in the one and only?
Right.
So what's the difference of that?
So
one tends to be a singular idea.
Soulmates. I think I'm talking about soulmates.
Yes.
I think you can have multiple soulmates that come into your life at different times.
And not all of them, I think, have to be romantic.
Exactly. I would say my best friend is my soulmate.
It's crazy. I think you appreciate this the older you get, where you just go, dude, like there's so many people we don't jive with in life.
And so many.
But then there are people that you're like, dude, like my best friends are the same best friends, largely, like majority, that I had in fifth grade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Brent has that too.
And that's so weird because now we live all over the place.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting.
But you're so close. And like when you talk again, it's like
nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we still joke about the same things we did 20 years ago. Guys are so lame. All right, this next question is, hi, do you think it's a good idea for me to push my wife to sleep with someone?
No.
This is, I think, increasingly popular. Is this cuckoldry?
Yeah, cuckolding. Cuckolding is becoming more popular. There is actually, I did a podcast episode on my podcast Love Bites with the cuckold dress.
Okay.
So she is like known to be like the face of this lifestyle.
Really?
The cuckolding lifestyle.
Wow.
Yeah. And she knows a lot about like the kind of the nitty gritty, because there are like kind of implicit rules that I don't even know, because it's like people don't study them, but people that practice them like know them. So she will, you know, she will have like a male partner who's a cuck and like loves watching her having sex with like other men.
What do you mean a male partner? Just to be clear, is this like a guy for hire, or is this like she has a partner?
Like a partner. She's
a partner.
Male.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A man partner.
Right.
Who is a cuck, like who loves watching her have like his girlfriend have sex with other men that he chose.
Now, why is that less common to see the opposite, that women want to watch their man have sex with someone else? Why is that less? Is it just as simple as men are more visual?
No, I think it's evolutionary theory. If you think about it, like women, we need to like protect our resources. So women are more typically like tend to be more like jealous.
Yes.
Because they have to protect their resources. Like
right.
If this man is my resources, and
right.
Like if I have a baby with this man, like I need to protect our monogamy.
Right.
Because what if he has sex with this person, likes them more and leave me, and then my resource would be...
Yeah.
You know, leaving my life. So I think it's more like evolutionary, like kind of subconscious. But, you know, we have not yet tried this way, but I would be open to.
Yeah.
Like being the cuck.
Oh, and because you're so visual.
Yeah.
You have so many similar interests to men. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm a very like curious person. Like everything I want to try once. So like,
right.
That's why it's like really hard, like really bad with things that are, you know.
More commitment based?
Medicinal.
Oh, medicinal? What does that mean?
Because I just want to try everything once. Like
right,
I want to know what it's like, right?
Yeah.
So same thing with sex. So I would be open if we were like abroad and, you know, like tipsy, like in Spain, going out dancing.
Yeah,
if there was a girl who wants to have sex with Brent, I was like, oh, wow, I find her hot too.
Maybe, interesting.
Maybe I'll watch them.
Yeah.
Like that came to my mind a few times, and I'm sure it will be something in my life that I'll like try.
Yeah.
But I don't know yet if I would like it. I might like try it and be like, oh no, that makes me feel like so bad.
No, yeah, you do. I mean, that is really walking a fine line.
Yeah.
Tara watches it and she goes, I knew you should have never gone on that double black diamond.
yeah, watch all of that just like come back up to the surface. He's thrusting away going, what? 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 She's
good
going
job,
focus.
Mux. That was a good wrap, the
little,
bull wrap.
Little,
yeah.
Little bull wrap.
Well, that's all the time we have for your questions on Loveline this week. Thank you very much for listening. If you could be so kind to leave a review or a star rating is great too on the
please.
Podcast.
Yeah.
You can get us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the free to download Odyssey app. And of course, you can watch us in live and living color on K Rock's YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Tara, where can they find you on social?
At lovebites.co, that's LUVBITES.CO.
Fantastic. And this show, if you want to follow us along on social media, at I Love Loveline. Peace.
Woo.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on Loveline are not necessarily those of staff, management, sponsors, or the station.
Loveline is produced and engineered by Jonathan Beermug Cantrell. Loveline is a presentation of the world famous K Rock.
You hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
I'm not hanging up till you hang up, so hang up.
Well, I'm not hanging up till you hang up, so you hang up.
Okay, on the count of three, we'll both hang up. Cool?
Cool.
One, two,
three.